Welcome, everybody, to Holy Commutes. This is Tim Dean, Texas Tim, for this Tuesday edition of Holy Commutes. I have a West Coast guest with me this evening, Peter Mockabee, who most people know as Mock. Peter, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Good to talk to Tim Dean. It's fun.
Yeah. I was interviewing Red and told him that you were going to be one of my guests. And he said, man, that's an awesome dude. And so you have a great reputation amongst the Wiffle community. And it was great seeing you at the Golden Stick Open. You guys played pretty good. And you know, it was fun seeing you there and all those guys playing together. How did you end up doing at Golden Stick?
I played with Tom Gannon and a few other players that he was able to scrounge up. Supposed to be like a PLW type squad. Things started taking shape differently with me and Tom. So we did, I think we did better than expected. We beat really good high quality teams, which for in my end is a good thing. We got to a spot where we got to the championship bracket, which is the goal. Give yourself, we knocked out a very, very good quality team who's been there before. That's the Black Dog guys, you know, Little Griff and Dina. Mm-hmm. You can tell still already hurting in the knee, I think. So to win that game and win against an Earl team who's been there before, good quality player, it goes a long way. So, and then our last game was in the rain, you know, it's kind of like the comeback cup. It was, the weather got really bad. So I'm just glad I got out of there without any like weather delays. And so it made the trip worth it for me.
I didn't fare so well getting out of there. You know, it came a deluge late in the night, probably 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And Gannon had to try to drive me back to my Airbnb in a hurricane and we didn't make it. It was flooding. And I just said, let me out. And I got out of the car in knee deep water and waited a little ways till I got out of that and walked back to my Airbnb about 3/4 of a mile away. But the whole way, Peter, I was just sitting there laughing. I'm going, you know, I wasn't in a bad neighborhood or anything. I said, this is crazy. And it was just, I just laughed it off. It was all I could do, but it was a good tournament. I'm sorry they didn't get to play it to finish. And again, some of the conditions were miserable, but it had nothing to do with the tournament or anything like that. It's just one of those things. So,
yeah. You know, love playing yard. It kind of puts everybody at the same level as far as, you know, being able to see it and rip it. You know, you can't blow by anybody. Defense comes in play time. So it's a different style of wiffle ball that I like to play. Mm-hmm. Especially allows me to actually pitch if I need to, because I can't chuck it, you know, 90. I can top out at 65. So that puts me in a good spot.
That's your fastball, 65?
48, yeah. I can't do 48 with – I can hold my own on a round robin game locally, but, yeah, you don't need me pitching NTT. So, yeah, it's yards, a whole different style of hitting, style of, you know, barreling up with a skinny bat. So it's fun. It's good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Play.
So, hey, Mock, tell me, where do you live now?
I'm in Upland, California. That's about 45 minutes east of LA. We're in the suburbs, you know, near, just out there by the Ontario airport.
Yeah. Suburbs are not bad. The suburbs, you know, getting east is probably not bad, right?
Don't want to go towards LA. You get busy, you get crowded, you get more traffic. So we're out here, you know, 45 is to an hour away. And then, yeah, it's a good spot to be because you're still next to everything you want to be, like, you know, downtown. It's good.
Did you grow up there?
Yeah, I grew up here in Southern California. I actually grew up in the city of San Dimas, which is famous for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, graduated from San Dimas High School and then lived all around Southern California for the last, you know, 40 something years. So been settled here in Upland for a good 9-10 years now.
Yeah. Where'd you go to college?
I originally went to Azusa Pacific, which is like a family university. Been there for and I actually still do some broadcasting for them time to time when they call me up and need me. And then I end up dropping out because my grades were really bad. Wasn't ready to do that yet. And then I finished up at University of Laverne, a super small, you know, I think they're a D3 type school as far as like, you know, small knit community liberal college. It was a good place to be. Got a 25-year-old program and then finished my bachelor's degree there. Didn't end up using it for teaching, but that's a long story.
What's your degree in?
It's liberal studies for being a teacher.
All right. That school, Azuna, is that how you say it?
Azusa Pacific. Azusa.
So they did at one time have a really good football program, did they not?
They did. And they just canceled it. First year, they do not have it anymore. They decided to pull the string on it, which is so sad for us alumni. That's like, really? Because we produced some Christian Foye back in the day. He's our guy. He's our go-to. Like, he's our NFL guy. He's our, you know, Nigerian nightmare. We know all the stories. We know all the why he became a football player right there on that track and field. Like, he to like not have that history anymore. And we had a couple guys get drafted these last couple years. Like, it's a good program, but it got too expensive. The travel for 55 players and coaches to Hawaii, and I think not even Hawaii, but like the amount of teams available to play started getting less in that Great Northwest region conference. So it got more expensive. Yeah. So they decided. So it's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I remember, because of Okoye. And I remember that. So, Peter, tell me about your experience in WIF. At what age did you start playing? When did you start playing competitively? What major teams have you played on? And what's your role out in SoCal?
I started playing probably when I was in high school, just with friends, not taking it seriously yet. I was just figuring it out. When I got freshman year of college, me and my roommates and like people in the dorm, we'd go out at Azusa Pacific. We had this like little amphitheater. It's a perfect mini baseball field setup. It's a, you know, kind of a place where you go and do homework and sit and feel nice and quiet. But we go, and it's a super small, like, you know, 80-foot fence type small ball wiffle ball field. We went there and play like almost every day. That's where the intramural like wiffle ball tournament was. It's just, so for freshman year on, I've been playing just for fun with friends. We won that intramural tournament. And then by my sophomore or junior year, as we're still playing, and now we moved to like an apartment complex next to the college. So we started playing there. And then we got to the next intramural tournament. And I still remember this team showed up, who were freshmen at the university, and they had team uniforms. They had skills to, like, we knew what we were doing, and they crushed all of us. And I still remember that to the day. I don't remember any of their names. I don't remember what tournaments they played. It might've been Fast Plastic stuff, because you could tell they came dressed in their jerseys and they were ready to pound everybody. And I remember that feeling back when I was 20 years old, like, and I remember being able to handle them myself. I remember, like, that's something I would want to get into. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, the only time I ever played after college was just me and my older brother. It was just my brother in my family. So 4 years older than me, we come for Christmas, Easter, that sort of thing, to parents' house, and then we play in the front yard one-on-one. My brother's decent as well. He just doesn't play enough like I did. So we play. And then 2009, just started Googling, hey, where's local wiffle ball stuff? I don't know what caused me to do that, knowing that I've been playing last, you know, 5-10 years with my brother one-on-one. So found Richard Ewald, a Fast Plastic. He's organizing SoCal stuff for a long time. And I was able to get on his team for a Fast Plastic tournament that 2009 summer. And I was hooked. I stunk that first tournament like everybody else does. didn't know how to handle the bad and different good quality pitching. And I'm like a very competitive inner person where if I know I can be better at something, I'll keep going for it. So I kind of put a fire under my belly. So I kept playing the Ewald stuff for the next couple of years. And then my first NCT experience was 2011. I jumped on Sylvie Serrano's team, the O-Bombers. That was like a hodgepodge team too. It was like he had a couple of random people from the Bay Area, and I think he had Whiffman on his team. And just a fun experience to see all the best players in the country and see what the level I needed to be at. So then the following year, I formed the Great West Gunslingers. And that was a great team to have. It was Ryan Kaufman, Randy Dalby, Darren Vieira, who doesn't really play much anymore because he tore up his shoulder and just wanted to become a family man again. And then a young kid who I haven't seen him in almost since, a young kid named Anthony. So having that experience, kind of going undefeated here on the West Coast, going over there and that whole Golden Stick type of rankings, we did well. But once again, Kaufman hurt himself, just like you were talking. Our ace hurt himself after throwing 13 innings to get us there. And then, you know, we ran into a former national champion, Doom, who ended up winning that same year, and lost to the Blue Razors, which is C4, basically. So we ran into two really good teams. And then from then on, I just kept playing. Once Richard Ewald decided to cut it quits on organizing, I kind of took over in 2014. Was able to grab two fields that they use there in Southern California stuff, like from Steve Pugh, who's been involved a lot in this stuff. And then just kept organizing tournaments and kept playing. So competitively since 2009, love to either jump on teams or form my own teams for national tournaments. I just love to play. I love to hit the best in the country. That's always my desire. Since I can't throw it by anybody, I always try to become a better hitter.
Right.
So that's the best spot to be in, to be the against the best. So it's been fun.
Well, that's good. It is a different challenge when you're trying to organize and get more teams and people, and marketing is always hard when you don't have any money or ways to reach people. And tell me about the Maccabee podcast show. That's not about wiffle ball. So tell me what it is. What was your inspiration about it, and how long you've been doing that?
My inspiration was to do something creative like that, do a podcast for myself, because I had the time, I had the technology to do it. Boys wanted to do my own type of sports show type broadcasting. It's always been a desire of mine. So to be able to do it freely was nice. My show is simple as 5 minutes a day sports show. So it's usually a current event. Like if tomorrow is a Maccabee podcast show, Monday through Friday, then I would talk about NFL that happened today, or, you know, the White Sox versus your Astros right now. Like, and I don't want to just break down the game. My goal is to do some random observation that I saw that maybe some random person didn't see. Like, you know, like something happened on, you know, something in the dugout that I found interesting, or things like that, where it's usually out of the box thinking. I'll write them down while I'm watching stuff. And it's a quick 5 minutes. I don't know about the branding of it because people don't know who I am across the country. So I'm not getting a lot of listens for it, for the amount of, you know, 30 to 60 minutes in the morning when I record it to how many listens I'm getting. I might rebrand it to make sure people know it's only 5 minutes a day and it's sports talk. But I just don't have that, you know, like you said, this talks of energy and marketing and
yep.
A lot of stuff going into it that, do I want to put that time into it to just make it more, you know, more seen? I don't know. As long as I'm having fun doing it, I think people will come around to listen to it. But it's fun. I just like to share my opinions about things, and hopefully things that, you know, if you're watching a White Sox Astros game, like hope you hear me comment about something that you didn't think about. So that was the goal. You know, I'm not on, you know, a certain pitch and a certain home run. It's not my job at SportsCenter. So that's kind of my goal for it. And then sprinkling, obviously, wiffle ball too, because anything, it's usually, I call it, you know, sports, entertainment, like music and movies, and then just any daily observation, like driving down the street and seeing, you know, $1,000 Halloween decorations, stuff like that. So crazy.
I understand. Something very few people know about is that I sort of ran across looking at some of your social media is you play the guitar.
I do play the guitar.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. That you have a little bit of musical talent.
My mom has a master's in music. So that kind of implanted me and my older brother to be in band and music. So growing up, I started playing the saxophone. I still can play it. I still have one. And then when I got to college, my roommates had guitars. So I started strumming theirs. And then by the age of 19 or 20, I finally got my own and just started strumming some, you know, easy chords. And I'm a man of faith. So I just started doing worship songs and just doing simple things like that. And that's how I started playing. So I like to play and just kind of set you back of just relaxing and just, yeah, don't play as much as I used to with all the kids running around and they want to
the string. Yeah. Kids get in the way of all kinds of stuff, wiffle ball, you know, doing what you used to love, all kinds of things. So
I'm glad that I don't get in too much way. Like I still get to play my wiffle ball. So it's good.
That's good. You know, and you sound like a little bit like me, and I have a wife that supports some of my crazy habits and interest. You know, you keep up with me on social media, you know that I also am a curler. And so I love to curl. And so I'm actually pretty good at it, actually. And it's the ice curling. So she supports me when I want to go travel to play or playing here in league play. And she's supporting me on me taking my vacation, some of my vacation days, and heading to Pennsylvania for a crazy wiffle ball tournament.
You got to have that amazing wife to be able to do this incredible sport and fun little hobbies that nobody else enjoys. Yeah.
That's true. Hey, you and I've talked about this, and so if people don't know, you're born and raised, lived in SoCal, but you are an avid Baltimore Oriole fan.
I am.
And can you explain to people that are listening and getting to know Peter Maccabee, why the Southern Cal guy such a big Oriole fan?
I think I got a couple bullet points on that. Because I've been able to talk about it my whole life. Like, why, you know?
Yeah.
Especially people that aren't, you know, like, why? I grew up here. I grew up going to Dodger games. I did. And parents would take us to Dodger games. We had friends that would allow us to go to Dodger games with them. And I maybe liked a few players, but going to that Dodger stadium, peeing next to adults in a big trough was frightening for me. So except for like Brett Butler back in the day, like me attached to the Dodgers was like zero. So then also another bullet point, for some reason, my only brother, 4 years older than me, also became a non-fan of the Dodgers. He became a Chicago Cubs fan, another team at the time that was miserable to be a fan of. So I forgot the story of while he did. I think someone took him to a game. Might have been a Cubs-Dodgers game, I'm not sure. But fast forward to like early high school years, like I was 13 or 14. I always collected baseball cards like every person my age did. We love baseball. So I got my Cal Ripken Jr. cards, got my Eddie Murray cards. I got my Orioles section there. You know, back in the day, you always make sure you had the team all together. So back in the day, you only get to watch one game a week because it's on ABC, game of the week. I didn't have ESPN back then. It was, you know, cable wasn't really there yet for me. So game of the week, Orioles were on. I think it was McDonald or Messina. I forget which one was on the mound. I think it was Ben McDonald. And then there was my guy, like Cal Ripken Jr., Eddie Murray. Those guys on my baseball cards. I think they ended up winning that game. It just felt like I liked the team. It's fun. And then I just kept watching. I just kept following them, paper, that sort of thing, following my favorite players that I started liking on that game. And then keep fast-forwarding when they got ESPN, probably the next following years, got to see them a little bit more on SportsCenter and highlights. And then the other exciting players came, like Brady Anderson. By my junior, senior year, we got more players that I was starting to get involved in, and it stuck. I don't know why, but it just stuck. And then been ever since. I remember being freshman year dorms, you know, the community TV. I remember going back and watching that game one, Jeffrey Mayer robbing Tony Tarasco of the home run. I remember exactly where I was. It was like, I had all these college buddies around me, and I'm watching this home run, you know, getting caught by the Yankee fan, and I'm yelling. I was already like so passionate about the Orioles that I couldn't believe it. So I was 18 years old and screaming at the TV in the dorm room that the Orioles could have won that game, and who knows. But
so when the Orioles doesn't happen as much, but when they come to SoCal and you go to watch them, do you actually wear their gear in that stadium?
Yeah, wear the Orioles gear at Angel Stadium. Yes.
Wow. Do you get mistreated at all?
Angel Stadium is like Disneyland to baseball. Dodger Stadium is like, I will not wear Orioles stuff to a Dodger game because people might think it's Giants stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Same colors, and Giants fans have been beaten up in the parking lot. So a little safety issue. Angel Stadium, it's so peaceful, and you can easily like be happy around other people. And the last 4 or 5 years, people almost feel sad that I'm wearing Orioles stuff because our team's I'm so sorry you're an Orioles fan. We just beat you with a walk-off again. Like, you know, like a few games here came down to the wire, and here I am hanging my head down. Like, we had a chance to beat them.
Yeah, I see. I can't do that right now with Astros gear. You know, there's just such that volatility from some fans, and I've read so many things in the wake of the 17 thing that, you know, and you know, at some places like, you know, Dodger Stadium and Yankee Stadium, it has been pretty bad. So
that makes sense.
So I don't know if I could do it at the Angels game, even though you say they're pretty mild. I don't know if I can wear my Astros stuff there, but
we have a 10 game mini plan for Angels games. So they're like my second favorite local thing. That's why I know how safe it is and bring our kids. And I was at the first Astros Angels game, you know, back with the fans, and yeah, it's, you know, no boos are left unheard.
Yeah. Well, it hadn't had that much of effect on them this year. That's for sure. But anyway, hey, you know, I've watched you a little bit out on PLW in Vegas. Tell me about your experience in Vegas. What do you think of that format and how it's going in Vegas?
It's one of the best fields you get to play on, mm-hmm. first and foremost. Adam has put together a pretty well-rounded, you know, place to go and play. The league itself is, I'm impressed by how many players they have.
Yeah.
You know, teams with 10 players each on the roster. That's 100 people. It's crazy how many people, how fast they've grown in less than a year
mm-hmm.
to get involved. And I would say half of those players are better than average now. You know, they're they can hit the ball, whatever's pitched, and the 10 to 15 guys that can pitch with a decent, clean ball yard style, which is, you know, a little bit more difficult to, you know, get it past people. So I think the style of play is something you just have to get used to, because I think what's great about loving wiffle ball is that I'm enjoying playing other brands of it, right? There's no wrong. I even got the JAL where it's one pitch. It's different, but it's still fun. It's still the great ball and the great little bats you can use and go and square it up. So I think that for the PLW, this, I got to play this last Thursday. You know, like me and Randy, we're trying to play as much as we can so we can just get some swings in, you know, hit a moving ball. And I thought it was interesting that I think their success is that they are in Las Vegas. They have all these guys and these owners of these teams that are creating this professional atmosphere of, there's some money involved. There's some betting on the side of, hey, yeah, I think we'll get 15 and a half wins. You know, there's these Vegas sportsbook mindset that's set into kind of the, I feel like it's part of the app, the idea of these Vegas guys, that's what they love. They love to put money on things. And I think that's been effective. It's creating this atmosphere of, let's care about this because they put money on it. And yeah. I'm kind of surprised by it because I wouldn't do that, but it's just, that's their lifestyle. They're living in Las Vegas. So it makes sense to me now.
I get it. I've enjoyed watching it. I've watched quite a bit. I watched most of the tournaments that they've done. My only beef as a viewer, and it's personal preference. It's just personal preference. The broadcasts have become too busy. There's too much going on. All this betting stuff and put your things in and you know, the rally train or whatever all that kind of stuff is. Listen, again, Mock, there's not many wiffle ball true fans my age, really, that keep up with it. And it may be just me at my age. Like, I don't want to deal with all that stuff. I want to watch wiffle ball. It's great that they're commentating. It's great, all the cameras and stuff like that. But all that stuff on the right-hand side, the chat and all the extra fluff is too busy and too much for me. That's just me.
That's definitely the generational gap. And then they're gearing towards that Twitch social media, yeah, that media part of it, because they're trying to move that into, let's get viewers and let's make money off of that Twitch and that TikTok and all the stuff where they get enough people,
yeah,
come every night, then they're going to start making money. And that's really all they're thinking about, in a sense of, let's build this thing to, their wiffle ball leagues have tried it, and they have money to back it right now. Sure.
Yeah.
But I think it's gearing towards that Twitch. It took me a while to figure it out too. Like, there's this betting atmosphere and this like younger gen, you know, Gen X or whatever generation they are, where it's just like, let's be chatty and let's talk.
I preface that by saying it's just me. It's not you, it's me. And that's the way I preface it. I know it works really good. And, you know, MLW, they do a different angle and are very successful. And I don't know if you saw, we're taping this before Tuesday, but I don't know if you saw last night what happened, that they were on MLB tonight.
My brother texted me that, hey, there's wiffle ball on TBS. I was like, oh, okay. 2 minutes later, I was able to get on it and saw that the Schultz kid and the whatever else they had with him. Right when I showed up, that guy was throwing decent stuff to whoever was hitting. It was like, okay. I mean, you know what my first thought was? I was like, awesome for the brand, right? Great for. That's my first thought. And my second thought was like, these MLW guys might get pounded in 2 weeks. They might get pounded to the ground because they've never experienced the level of play that I've experienced.
Sure.
You know, that route one might be pretty tough.
No, it is. And I think that they know that. I mean, I heard that a couple of years ago they played in NWLA and didn't do very well. I think their talent in their league has gotten better since then. And I think they know what they're up against. The two Wattabats that was just sent their way might help them. they know what they're up against, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I actually hope for the brand, the marketing of the game itself, because they have such a wide variety or wide net that they've cast. I hope they have some success, and I really do.
Yeah, me too. I think they've been really great with their YouTube audience and their video. The level of play is good. Like, it's honestly better quality than PLW because it's fast pitch. You can chuck it as hard as you can, right?
Yeah.
And it seems like they're hitting might be better because I think they're throwing it from so close. I think it's much closer than our 45, 48.
Does look like that.
I'm proud of them. That's good. It's good to represent them, and those two did a good job. It was fun.
So speaking of UWIF, let's just slide right into there since we're already there. Coming up here after this podcast goes live, tell me about your team and the roster that you're bringing.
We are the Whippets Wiffle Club. Got to finish in the Final Four last year. Lost to Usual Suspects. Got down early. We didn't have any pitching left. And that's what we try to fix this year. We added Ryan Kaufman to our roster, replacing Dan Foster from Chicago. So right now it's Ryan Kaufman, Randy Dalby, Pete Tatum, and me. Still a four-man squad. Now the problem is right now we have a, you know, kind of like the fantasy wiffle ball team right now for all your fantasy leagues that Ryan Kaufman is now questionable. He got the Q next to his name due to a back procedure on him. Got some stitches just last week. So there's a possibility that his stitches might not be good enough to go. He's going to find out the next Tuesday his final verdict if his back will still not be ripped apart. So he's got like about 18 total stitches back there due to a procedure he had to get done. So that's settling for us. So like, where are we going to be at? We're looking probably for a fifth right now, since we have that open roster spot just to back us up. We're still passing some little feelers around to see who's available. That's where we're at right now. We're at a spot where we were four good to go to about a week ago before Ryan had to have that procedure done. So,
Hate to hear that, you know, because, you know, you definitely want to be coming full strength. This is not where you want to have the Q next to your name. You want to be off that list. So, but exciting things. You get to start off because of your Final Four finish. You get to start off playing in the afternoon and not have to be right off in the morning. And I think that's going to be a big advantage, more of an advantage to people than they think it is, because it will help you even in the ties, because when you're tied with one of those teams that worked their way in, you're actually going to have an advantage on moving on. So
I read that last night. So that was a good advantage to have. I think we were passing around. I think Sylvie told us we're actually, for some reason, playing them first game, like Fuego versus Whippets. So I don't know how he figured that out.
I can't confirm that. So I'm not sure.
It's like, and for us, it's like, okay, we just showed Sylvie all our stuff that we got right now. We just practiced with them. He's someone who we faced the last 10 years. So it's who's got the advantage?
Yeah.
Obviously, so that's also advantage for us because we just saw him for 10 innings yesterday. So it's an interesting matchup right off the bat, you know. And I, you win that game, then you go play the other team that just won the two versus two matchup. We're still so confident in our team. I love Randy Dalby has a nice chip on his shoulder. Randy Dalby, you know how many times I've been in the Final Four and nobody takes me seriously? Randy Dalby has been in the Final Four so many times. He's been a player to pitch and hit and be a these quality teams with Jim Ballion and all these other teams, and even and me and Pete, that he's been there so many times and won it back when he was a young kid. Like, the experience that guy has is like, I love that he's got that chip on his shoulders. Like, yeah, you can keep counting me out. I'll see you in the Final Four. I'll doing what I can to win each game, and I'll see you in the end. Like, I love that. And great.
He's a good guy. He's actually very quiet. He doesn't do, and I think a lot of people that way, because he really isn't a very boisterous personality. And so he doesn't stick out at you. He's a silent assassin that just goes and gets the job done and does it. And very well liked amongst the sport. And he doesn't have an enemy in this sport. He really is a good dude, and looking forward to seeing your team play here coming up shortly. Hey, yeah. So tell me who in your wiffle ball fast pitch career so far, who's the toughest? Give me three pitchers that are the toughest you've ever faced.
The three toughest I've ever faced.
It doesn't have to be considered the best pitcher consensusly. It could be the one that you have just had the most trouble with.
Trying to go back to my memory here. Who did I just feel lost?
put you on the spot.
You know, I have a tough time with Joel DeRoche because he changes speed so much. So that's first on my mind on the West Coast. Joel, in the last few years, when I've been able to play against him, his change of speeds and his seems like his arm slots are even better than probably it was back then. So he's still crafty. So I had a hard time finding a good rhythm against him. National stuff, like last 10 years or so, I think I had a tough time with Cooper Ruckel 3 years ago. Or 2019, that's the last Cedar Park one. I think we faced him like we had that extra inning game where we were 0-0. And I felt like I was finally getting a rhythm against him and it was game over. So Cooper can chuck it. That was a tough one to handle because it was clean ball. It was a drop curve that you just had to find the right spot and find that arm coming right out of his hand and get a good cut on it. And lastly, I would say, who just owned me? I felt like I was lost against, I thought, you know what, just talk to him, but Red, it was in the draft tourney that GSW did where it was, I think we ended up playing against Red. I was on his team the year before, which is awesome. That's why I got to know him and play with him. And then the following year, I think we had to play against him. And I think his riser was just screwing me over. I couldn't figure out why I was moving different directions. And he was a good pitcher. More deceiving than I thought it was going to be, because it's weird to be sitting on riser and not realizing why I'm not hitting it. So, because I've gotten pretty good at trying to figure out a plan against each pitcher and trying to execute it. And I feel like I had a good plan against Red, but I could square it up. So I'll give Red a nod on the cap there. Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about what has made you Whiff, United Whiffles tournament, so special?
I think right off the bat when they got it going last year, like the pre-stuff, when you knew they were taking it very seriously. Like, this is the future of the national tournament is being led by these you know, committee of people, people that around the country are starting to, we all know, we all can easily talk to if you needed to. It wasn't, didn't feel like there was one style of doing a tournament. I think seeing it in like a, you know, independent minor league ballpark was cool to see when you, when I drove up and, you know, you could see pictures of it, but imagining, you know, eight fields on a nice ballpark with a, you know, fake green monsters, it was a cool atmosphere to have games. And I think, I don't know, just, I always enjoy the level of play, right? I want to go to the best and play against the best. And that tournament last year, I think because it was still on the East Coast in Pennsylvania, York, closer to New York and all those teams, we had, what, 40 teams last year. It was is what you would want in a national tournament. You know, the ones in Texas only didn't get the level of teams able to come out as many. So I think the location of being in that area is good.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously harder for us to come out there and be frozen to death on that Sunday. It seems so cold to us, California, Arizona guys. So I think it's just the matter of the atmosphere. And you know, there are 15 teams there this year that could easily win all four games on Sunday. You know what I mean? It's the top 16 that make it can easily go on a run that the Whippets did last year where we got the right hit at the right time. And it was good. It was a good tournament of just playing the best and bringing your best as much as you can. So, yeah.
Well, it is definitely going to be fun. Of all the national tournaments that I've run, it's probably the most memorable because of the location that it was held in. And so that just truly made it truly amazing. And I really did love it. I love the atmosphere. I love that they got the concession stands open and, just an amazing setting for wiffle ball, in my opinion. So it's pretty, pretty cool.
It'd be cool to see if the local community that goes to those York games can come out and see it and sit in the bleachers and check out, you know, eight games happening at one time. That's hopefully is a good experience for, you know, selling tickets and having people come.
Yeah.
Hopefully people come out and see it.
I really hope so. Hope the Friday night fan fest thing is a huge success. More than anything, that's what I'd like to see, people get out there on Friday. And MLW is going to be bringing some people. They got a big following. I'm pretty excited about that and meeting those guys. So going to be a lot of fun.
It sure will be.
Hey, I want to thank you for being on this podcast with me and learning a little bit about you. I'm looking forward to seeing you in when this comes out in a couple of days, and hanging out with all the players. Make sure you come up and say hey to me for a little while. Hopefully you may be coming up and telling me the results of your games. You know, usually that means that you're winning. So
right.
It'll be a lot of fun. So Peter, thanks a lot for coming on with me this evening.
You're welcome. You have a good night.
I sure will. And I want to thank everybody for listening to the Tuesday edition of Holy Commutes. And next week will be my final one for the month. And I'll be reviewing sort of my experience at UWIF and my trip along the way. So again, thanks for tuning in for Holy Commutes. This is Texas Tim. I will see you.